AM. FM. In Your Face Radio.
Welcome back to the Captain Jack Show. Once again, I'm your host, Captain Jack. I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do a show this week, and in order for you to understand that, you have to understand a little bit about the setup for my studio. I do the recording, do the show out of my house, but I have a loft that's set up to record in. And I have to walk up several stairs in order to get to the loft, and unfortunately this week I've been having some significant problems with my hip. And this is something that really bothers me because I have no idea why my hip hurts. You know, when I was younger, maybe in my 20s or 30s, I was far more athletic and in much better shape than I am now. If I hurt, I would have an explanation for it. I would injure my back, maybe I fell, maybe I lifted something that was too heavy, or I wrenched my knee, or I twisted my ankle, or something along those lines, but something that was always explainable. But now that I'm in my 50s, it's like every morning you wake up and somebody spins a roulette wheel, and wherever the ball lands, that's where I have pain. And apparently for the last few days, it has landed on left hip. And it's not something I like, and obviously it's causing me a lot of distress, but I'm glad that I was able to get up to the studio to do the show for you today. Now, the truth is that I've been having pain in my legs for years, and I believe with all my heart that one of the problems that I have is that I'm significantly overweight. I'm sure that if I lost weight and if I took that pressure off my legs, particularly my knees, they would feel a lot better. So a couple of weeks ago, I started on a diet, and it's one of these nationally advertised diets that you see on TV with prepackaged food. I'm not going to say which one it is, but it's not Nutrisystem. And I've been on the diet for a couple of weeks, and I've lost about 17 pounds. And I'm very happy that I've lost 17 pounds, but it reminds me about the way that men and women look differently at losing weight and body images. Now, my wife is all upset with me because I can lose weight so fast. Of course, I gain weight really quickly. But the fact is that men and women do look at dieting differently, and they look at losing weight differently. Now, I have two daughters and a wife. I had a mother, and I have two sisters. And I've been around a lot of people, both men and women, who have gone on weight loss programs, whether you want to call it a diet or an exercise program, etc. And almost uniformly, women want to lose weight because they want to look better, and they want to fit in a dress, they want to look better in a bikini, a bathing suit, etc. And that's fine. And those are their goals. And that's their approach to dieting. And men just do it differently, and they look at it differently, because the truth is that men don't really diet for the purposes or want to lose weight for the purposes of looking that much better, because we honestly don't care how good or bad we look, and I'll discuss that in a second, but we're more concerned about our health. But in that regard, when it comes to losing weight, we're still children, and we look at things differently. You know, women, as they're dieting, they try on different clothes to see how they fit and see how they feel. Men, on the other hand, we gauge our success in dieting and this is the first phase of dieting, we want to see our dicks in the shower. I mean, and that's it. You know, when we get so excited, if we can see our dicks in the shower, we have successfully completed the first phase of dieting. And I haven't gotten there yet, but I'm going to be there soon. Now, the second phase of dieting is that we want to lose our boobs. Now, all men that I know love boobs, but we love them on women. On men, not so much. And, you know, that's the second goal. Years ago, I heard a comedian, Kevin James, who's an actor now, and he did a routine about the fact that, you know, his dieting goal was he just didn't want to jiggle so much when he was brushing his teeth. And I truly can relate to that. I understand that. But, again, this is about health, and it's not really about appearance, because you never really see... And you get to the point where you realize you don't see that many old fat men. And fat men die young. And so you do this for your health and not necessarily for your appearance, because the reality is, men don't care all that much about their appearance. Yes, you have this, some men who are metrosexual and, you know, they're into fashion and they're into this, but the vast majority of men, they don't care what they look like because they believe no matter what they look like, they can get any woman on earth. And that's another big difference between men and women. Women believe that there are men who are out of their league based upon their appearance. And whether that's true or not, I think women are far more realistic about their attractiveness to the opposite sex. Men, on the other hand, believe, no matter what they look like, that under the right set of circumstances, they can get any girl under the sun or any woman under the sun. I remember 20 years ago or so, I was working for a law firm, and there was a girl there. She was 19 years old, and she was one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen in my entire life. Her face was spectacular. I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, she came in like fifth in the Miss Puerto Rico Philadelphia contest. Now, the head of the firm was a guy who was probably in his mid to late 40s, maybe early 50s, balding, not particularly good-looking man, had a beard, you know, that typical reaction that balding men have. They grow the beard to distract the fact that they have no hair on the head. And he always had this look on his face like he was going to have a temper tantrum, and, you know, he always had his arms at his side like he was going to have a temper tantrum. And I remember one time he turned to me at a Christmas party, and this girl, who I'll call Mary, was on the dance floor, and she was dancing away, and he turned to me and he said, you know, man, if I wasn't married, Mary would have a major problem. And I don't know if I actually looked at him the way I was thinking, but I'm like, dude, you know, what do you have to offer this gorgeous young woman? You're middle-aged, you're not particularly good-looking, you're not even a nice person. And what would make you think she was that she would be attracted to you, other than the fact that you have some money? So, I mean, are you thinking that perhaps she's a whore? But I don't think he thought along those lines. It was just this typical idea that every man thinks they can have every woman. And it's like, it's a psychotic disconnect with reality. It's absurd. But be that as it may, I am on this diet. I am trying to lose this weight. And I am beginning to feel better. I'm getting definition in the layers of fat, and that's a good thing. So, in any event, I'm going to kick this up a notch too pretty soon, because although I've been losing weight pretty quickly, I anticipate that I'm going to slow that down, and unless I hit the gym to keep my body metabolism up, I'm probably going to plateau at some point, and I really don't want that to happen. And I really don't like going to the gym, but I'm going to do it because it's important, and I do want to get healthy. But it reminds me about the fact that we're in November, and it being towards the end of the year, just like clockwork, in a few weeks, you're going to start to see infomercials and commercials for exercise equipment, weight loss programs, diet, you know, gym memberships, and things like that. And they annoy me. Now, I know you're shocked that something would annoy me, but this does. And it annoys me predominantly because the people are so fucking happy. Now, people who are on diets are not happy. People who are doing exercise are not happy. And if I see people on TV with smiles on their faces while they're exercising, doing this, doing that, it turns me off because it's phony. If you want to show me a program you want me to buy, show me a person who's cursing while they're trying to lift certain weights or do certain exercises because they're in pain, because they hate it. Nobody likes exercising. Exercising sucks ass. It's a horrible thing, but it's a necessary thing if you're going to stay in shape. Now, I've been to the gym before, and I'm going to hit the gym again, and because this time I'm going to succeed on my diet. But, you know, I've been to the gym before, and, you know, sometimes you get into going to the gym, and it becomes a regular thing. It becomes almost like an obsession until something happens that breaks your spirit or something, and you fall back and you get back into your usual habits. But so the last time I was going to the gym, you know, I'd been going fairly regularly and I was losing some weight, you start to get this smug satisfaction about going to the gym, how you're superior to other people, and you're doing something to benefit yourself and your marriage or whatever you're doing. And I remember specifically being on the treadmill. Now, I happen to like the treadmill for a lot of reasons. One is it's low impact and it's easy to do, doesn't require a lot of thought, but mostly it allows me to watch television. And in essence, it allows me to be both doing exercising and being a couch potato at the same time, which is a good thing. But anyway, I'm on the treadmill, and I'm walking at a good clip. Now, until you lose significant weight, you really shouldn't run. So I'm walking, and you know, I'm getting my heart rate up, and but I'm walking at a good clip, and I'm building up a sweat, and I'm really feeling good, especially when I turn to my left and I see a woman who's also overweight, and she's on the treadmill, and she is walking slower than any person I've ever seen in my entire life. And I get this smug satisfaction, again, over me about the fact, gee, you know, I know I'm much heavier than this woman is, and I'm really moving on this thing, and I'm feeling good, until I happen to notice the speed that she was walking, and it was faster than I was going. So that is one of the things that kind of set me off. But again, this time I'm going to make it because, you know, I really don't have a choice. I want to get down to the same weight I was in high school. You know, I've got a significant ways to go. My goal weight is 185 pounds. I started at 331 and a half. I've lost 17 pounds. I'm on my way. And, you know, I'll keep you updated on the progress. You know, this is going to put me into a different tangent because I really didn't want to discuss this, but I will. On a serious note, there is a serious stigma about being fat in this society. You know, if I was an alcoholic or if I was a drug addict, I think for me personally, stopping doing those things would be relatively easy. I'm not saying it is easy for most people, and I'm not saying it's an easy thing at all. Please don't get me wrong, because I know there are recovering addicts out there who may be listening, and I'm not diminishing anything that you're doing or have been doing, but I'm saying for me personally, I don't think it would be hard for me to put down drugs or put down alcohol. But there's a difference between being a drug addict and an alcoholic and being a food addict, because you don't need alcohol to live and you don't need drugs to live, but you do need nutrition to live, and it makes it that much more difficult for the purposes of kicking a food addiction habit and getting your weight under control, because it's something that you have to do on a daily basis in order to survive. And when you look at the person down the street who is significantly overweight, and your first thought is, wow, what a glutton, what a slob, what a this, what a that, keep in mind there are possibly medical reasons why a person has difficulty losing weight. There are glandular issues that come into play. In my personal case, I have a problem with the thyroid. Now, I'm not going to use that as an excuse. I love food. I've always loved food. I tend to overeat. But there are people who have real, genuine medical conditions that affect their weight and their size. But it really doesn't change who they are as a person. And whether I'm a thin person or I'm a fat person, I am the same person. And keep that in mind when you're judging the person that's down the street. Now, when we come back from the commercial break, I'm going to be going into my interview with Dean Haskins, who is the chairman of the Birther Summit, which is going to take place in Washington, D.C. in March of 2012. So I will be back in a minute, and we will talk further then.
Would you like to record now? Start anywhere you like.
This is In Your Face Radio. Political talk without all the bullshit. In Your Face Radio. Radio without eating disorders.
I never accuse somebody of a felony without being convicted.
And it is not outrageous, and I think it's outrageous for people to act as if you can only speak the way our criminal justice system works.
Drug use.
First smoked marijuana somewhere in California.
Or lies.
Moving the economy forward.
In Your Face Radio.
Hi, this is Derek Turner from FreePress.net and StopBigMedia.com, and you're listening to In Your Face Radio.
I think someone at my friend's school has this thing called autism. My friend's brother's son has autism.
My neighbor's son has autism. My son has autism.
Autism is getting closer to home. Today, 1 in 110 children is diagnosed with autism. That's a 600% increase in the last 20 years. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org.
Hi. Join us every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Pacific, for JD In Your Face, a political rock goddess. Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here at InYourFaceRadio.net. Give it a voice.
In Your Face Radio.
We'll do it live! F*** it! I'll write it and we'll do it live!
We're doing it live.
And we're back from the break.
In a minute or so, we're going to go to my interview with Dean Haskins. Now, Dean's an interesting fellow with a person who is trying desperately to be a player in the birther movement. He fancies himself to be someone who's very important. I've noticed on Facebook and various other places that often when he's challenged to a debate by anyone, he refuses, claiming that the challenger is a, quote, nobody, close quote. I always thought that this was pretty pompous, but I had no idea how far it actually went. When I interviewed him, I realized and I found out that the man actually carries theme music with him and uses it whenever he talks. So I want you to give this a listen. I think you'll enjoy the interview and you'll find that it's very enlightening. Welcome to the show, Dean. I want to jump right into some of the specifics. You are the Grand Dragon, the Executive Director of the Birther Summit, which is something that you're planning to, or an event that you're planning to bring all of the great minds and leaders of the Birther movement together, like Orly Tates, Jerome Corsi, and James David Manning, to Washington, D.C. on March 29, 2012, to talk to your millions of supporters to rally the nation to get what you want. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well, I've been looking at your website, and it seems like you have about 25 people attending the Birther Summit, including 22 or 23 speakers. Wouldn't you consider that to be an epic failure?
No.
I see. Well, let's get into the Birther Summit a little bit. What would you consider the main objective of the summit to be?
At least confuse the issues surrounding Barack Obama's constitutional eligibility to be president.
How are you going to do that?
The dissemination of disinformation, or propaganda.
But to what point? What is your ultimate goal?
Absolute power.
Absolute power? Wow, that is a lofty goal. Do you think that the people of this country would like that?
I really am not that interested in what these people have to say.
I see.
Is the picture becoming clearer?
Well, yes it is. So your goal is to remove President Obama for you to become a dictator, is that correct?
Yes.
When you do become dictator, what do you want?
Power, corruption, more power, more corruption.
Good plan. Well thought out there, Dean. When do you want this to happen?
Now.
But your summit isn't until March 2012. Is it coming through to you yet that you will have to wait until at least then to accomplish your goals?
Loud and clear.
Oh, okay. Well, at least that is something. Do you think that there are a lot of people who support this, support your desire to become the dictator of this country?
There are many groups across the country that all have the same vision and goal.
How do you propose to do this?
We're working right now on a plan that will allow that to happen.
Okay. Now, I assume that includes stating over and over again that the president is not constitutionally eligible to be president.
Yes.
Is there something you call that?
Yes.
Well, what?
Natural-born citizen for dummies.
So basically you are lying over and over again to morons in the hopes of creating an uprising that would allow you to take over the country.
Yes.
Good plan there, Dean. You are claiming that there is a Supreme Court precedent for your position. Which case is that?
Minor versus Happersett.
I understand that you believe that same decision, Minor versus Happersett, also stands for something else that is very controversial. What is that?
In Minor versus Happersett, the court affirmed that the moon is made of cheese?
Cheese? You know, Dean, there have been people who have been to the moon, and they can attest to the fact that it's not made of cheese.
They are lying. The U.S. Supreme Court's precedents must be followed.
Here's a picture from Apollo 11 and some of the moon rocks. These don't look like cheese.
There's something very wrong with this picture.
Cheese. Wow. Do you think that people will say that you're crazy about that?
Not surprisingly. Yes.
Well, that is becoming pretty obvious to everyone by now. Now, Dean, you recently took a trip to Hawaii with Mickey Booth to do some what you called fact-checking. I understand that you went to the Department of Health. I have some tape of the two of you plotting strategy in their offices. Did you accomplish anything there?
No.
I didn't think so. You were really on vacation, weren't you?
Yes.
Just as I thought. Let's talk about your summit some more. You seem to get very excited every time I mention it, don't you?
Yes.
This is your chance to finally be somebody, isn't it? I mean, your whole life you've been a nobody, and this is going to give you the opportunity to be somebody.
Yes.
That's pretty much what I figured. But wow, Dean, you really are getting excited there. Dean, why are you taking your dick out?
So that all of us will be able to grasp it very easily.
I am not going to be grasping your dick, Dean. Now put it away.
No.
I said put it away. This is getting really weird. Well, anyway, but with only a few people who are attending your summit, wouldn't you say that your chances of taking over the country are not very good? Dean, calm down. It'll be okay. Dean, get yourself together. Calm down. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to have to end this here. He is just inconsolable at the moment, and I'm just not going to be able to continue with the interview at this time. Perhaps we can bring Dean back at another time to finish, and I'm sorry this got so weird. It looks like I have a few minutes to kill because the Haskins interview didn't last as long as I had anticipated, so I thought I'd tell you a little bit about my family life, and more specifically about my dad. My dad's 80 years old, and at the age of 80, he decided that he was going to become the Grandma Moses of novelists, and he took up writing. Now, as with a lot of people who are in an older generation, they're not that computer literate, and my dad's no exception, although I have to say probably for a man his age, he is significantly better at using a computer than most people are. Well, he decides to write this novel, and it's a spy novel involving Israel and international intrigue and various other things, and it's actually not that bad in terms of the story. But he asked me to edit it, and so my father gathers all of the pages that he did, and he emails them to me, and he wants me to work on it in terms of editing. He wants me to fix the spelling, the paragraph structure, you know, things like that. And he sends me 100 pages. And he sends me 100 pages, each of which is kept in a separate file. Sent me 100 separate files, each representing a different page in his book. And these pages were not numbered. And to make it worse, he sends it to me in a format that my word processing program, which I use Word, Microsoft Word, does not recognize. Now, Microsoft Word can basically translate any word processing format. I think if Martians came down and sent me something, it'd be able to convert that. But somehow or other, it was not able to convert this. So I had to find the program that he wrote, was writing the pages on, which fortunately was a free download. It was something called OpenOffice. And I downloaded the program. I was able to open up the pages and copy and paste them into one long document as opposed to 100 separate pages and start to try and figure out the order that they were supposed to go in And I think I was doing a reasonably decent job of that. And I'm editing the book, and I come across, well, even before this, you know, God bless him, you know, my father is a very bright man, but he doesn't have much of a formal education. So there was problems with some sentence structure, and there was almost a complete absence of punctuation. Every sentence seemed to be its own paragraph. Almost every page seemed to be its own chapter. And I'm trying to fix all this stuff, and I'm trying to put it together to some semblance of a book that would, you know, make sense. And I'm reading it, and I'm coming across not just the mistakes I anticipated, and, you know, that was to be expected, but maybe, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 pages into the book, I find a very descriptive, very, what's the right word, graphic sex scene. Now, if you can imagine how uncomfortable you might be watching a porn movie with somebody who is your relative, who is, you know, like your dad or your mom or something like that, you can begin to understand the embarrassment, the uncomfortableness of what I was reading when you're sitting there thinking, my dad wrote a graphic sex scene. And it was a very uncomfortable thing for me to be reading, and yet I wasn't offended by that, because Lord knows I'm not offended by porn. It was uncomfortable, but the part that bothered me the most about dealing with this was how poorly it was. Now, it's not that the ideas were bad, but you had very cliched, very hackneyed phrases in there, but it was the dialogue that really got to me. And this is a direct quote from the book, where a younger man, maybe about 17, was having a, you know, summer fling with a beautiful young woman who was teaching him the ways of lovemaking that would be of value to him later on in his life. And she actually says this to him in the book: "Go to sleep now, my beautiful young lover, for when you awake, I will pleasure you with my mouth." That is a direct quote. I mean, again, I'm not offended by the actual existence of the sex scene, but I just wish the dialogue had actually been a bit funnier. I was working on it, and then, of course, there's another sex scene. And then there's another sex scene. And I'm beginning to wonder if, like, this is just a sex book. And I stopped reading and I stopped editing when I got to the part where he's describing a dog that has protruding nipples for some stupid reason. And, you know, frankly, it was a source of discord between my father and myself, because I did promise him that I would edit the book, and I was working on it, and I stopped. And there were several weeks in a row where he would ask me, you know, are you working on the book? What's going on with it? Blah, 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 blah. And I would lie to him. I would tell him that I was working on the book, and I really couldn't, because it was very difficult, and it was almost impossible to put together. And frankly, I was kind of hoping he would die before I ever had to return it to him. Until one day he accused me of lying about it. You know, he accused me of lying to him about and saying that I was working on the book when I wasn't. Now, he was right, but how dare he assume that I was lying? So I actually worked on the book for a long time, you know, over a few days, and sent him like 30 pages, and, you know, it seemed to satisfy him for a while. But I'm not sure if he liked the editing that I did, because he never sent me any more stuff to work on. But that can kind of give you like a little glimpse into the background of my life, that when I tell you that I attract crazy, I mean. Now, we've reached the end of the show. I want to remind you that you can email me at CaptainJack97@hotmail.com or CaptainJack@InYourFaceRadio.net, or you can call me and leave me a message at 610-241-7150, and I will address your comments, questions, whatever, on the air when I have the opportunity to do so. Till the next time, this is Captain Jack signing off.